Gear Patrol just called their ISO-certified dive watch the best sub-$500 dive watch. Full stop. And their ceramic watch material almost magical. The Wall Street Journal called them iconoclastic cool, potentially redefining the industry itself. Who are we talking about? It's Movement. And they're leveling up your gift-giving with the biggest deals of the holiday season and the sleekest watches around. Shop 30 to 60% off Movement's variety of designs, colorways, and functionalities. From the thinnest automatic dress watch under $500 to waterproof guarantee adventure-ready sport watches to rare ceramics, Movement's got options for everyone on your list. Whether you're gifting for family, friends, or yourself, be the good gifter this year with Movement's huge site-wide holiday sales and enjoy the usual fast and free shipping. Shop 30 to 60% off now at movement.com. That's MVMT.com.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Between the shadows of reality and the fringe of our own fears lurks a world of monsters. Strange creatures and frightening phantoms who test the very boundaries of our science and superstition. It's a realm of mystery and legend, a place of fact and fear. This is Monstro Bizarro.
Saw this thing walk out from behind some trees. Looked like a wolf or a huge dog, but it was walking. I mean, on two legs like a person. It was just starting to get dark, but I had a clear enough view to know what I was seeing. It was like a nightmare. Like something just appeared out of a movie. A really scary movie. It was covered in grayish hair all over and had a muscular looking body, but wasn't overly big. It had parts on its body where the hair was less thick, but for the most part, the hair just hung down 3 inches long. Its head had a muzzle like a wolf with its ears sticking up and canine teeth. The eyes were one of the scariest things about it. They were yellow and sort of bloodshot. It just looked at me as it continued to walk on its back legs more into the open. Its front legs, or arms I guess, were sort of hanging at its side. I couldn't tell if it had paws or hands. At first I thought it was some kind of weird wolf or big dog. The more I observed it, the more I could tell it wasn't quite either one. I mean, it walked upright, but there was something else about it that seemed off. And it just seemed too comfortable walking on two legs, like that's how it normally walked. The thing lingered in there in the shadows for a few moments before it turned and dropped on all fours and leapt out of sight. The whole thing happened in such a short time, but for me it seemed like forever. As soon as it jumped behind the trees, I turned and ran to my four-wheeler and rode like hell out of there. I didn't want to see that thing again. I could barely believe I saw it in the first place. I hate to use this comparison because it seems a bit ridiculous, but the best way I can describe it is that it looked like a werewolf. A freaking werewolf.
No doubt everyone across the globe is familiar with the concept of a werewolf. The archetype has been a staple of folklore, literary tales, cinema, games, and comic books, making it one of the most iconic monsters, if you will, in the world. Its roots grew from legends of the Lugaroo in Europe, a lycanthrope, the belief that a human could turn into a wolf, whether by magic or other means. In the light of modern science, this seems like a stretch, something that is relegated to horror movies and old-world beliefs. Yet the possibility of man-like wolves still remains, having transformed into the realms of modern cryptozoology in the form of Dogman, or Dogmen as they are known. These cryptids are said to resemble large canids, yet they have the ability to walk upright on two legs. Often seen lurking along deserted roads at night, crouched by wooded waterways, or frequenting paranormal hotspots such as cemeteries, sacred grounds, and railways, these extraordinary beasts are seemingly corporeal entities that very much resemble our concept of a werewolf. But are these things real? Are they flesh and blood, or something supernatural? Join me, your host, Lyle Blackburn, for a moonlit journey across the American Midwest to the very heart of Dogman territory. If you dare. Because if the encounters are anything like witness Jay Tellman described at the outset of this episode, we might not make it back. The U.S. Census Bureau defines the Midwest as a 12-state region of north-central United States between the Appalachian Mountain Range and the Rocky Mountain Range. This includes Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Michigan, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, North Dakota, Ohio, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. Within this area exist some beautiful landscapes populated by a solid cross-section of hardworking citizens rooted in tradition and pure Americana. It is also the heart of a cryptid story that has manifested itself as a full-blown paranormal trend. The statement heard at the outset of this episode seems to be typical of Dogman sightings. A chance encounter with something that surely can exist, right? A canid that can walk upright on two legs for an extended period. Quadrupeds such as wolves aren't designed for this mode of locomotion, yet according to witnesses, this is what they are doing. Not to mention the enormous size of these creatures, adding up to an experience that would be frightening at the least, and downright traumatizing at the worst. And who could blame the witnesses for these reactions? To see anything that remotely resembles a werewolf in the woods, by yourself, in the dim light of dusk or the full moon, would be far scarier than anything Universal Studios could ever dream up. Take, for example, this report cataloged by the North American Dogman Project, an organization who actively researches these cases and publishes witness encounters. According to the witness, he was driving the back roads of Burnett County, Wisconsin, with his sister-in-law when they saw something monstrous. Just about an hour before dark, some of us enjoyed going for what we called deer rides. We had a route we would always use. The route took us to a place that went through a wildlife preserve. The road through the preserve always made me uncomfortable because it was a swampy bog on both sides. It was a narrow gravel road, and in order to turn around, you would need to go down a very narrow drive to a parking area for hunters. On this evening, it was just my sister-in-law and I. Sometimes we would take cameras to take pictures of the deer. This night, we didn't have a camera with us. It was hot and we had our windows down because the air conditioner wasn't working. We had just started down that creepy road when we noticed something black in the road, about a half mile ahead of us. As we got closer, it appeared to be dark gray in color. It also appeared to have an elongated muzzle. It had its back to us,
but it was a little sideways, so we could tell it was eating something. I stopped the car and just kept my foot on the brake. This animal had very wide, muscular shoulders, and its fur was longer than a bear's. Its ears were pointy, like a German shepherd's, and stood straight up on top of its head. This animal had hands. It was holding a dead rabbit. The animal noticed us and started to turn its head. That's when I turned on my headlights. It wasn't dark yet, but I wanted to see this thing better. It turned and faced the car. The headlights caught its eyes. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Its eyes glowed reddish-orange in the headlights. Then it stood up straight on its back legs. As this thing moved, it was jerky, like it wasn't comfortable in its own skin. It was not a natural movement. The animal sprinted at my car. It took at least 6 steps. I freaked out. I gunned my car right at it. I was in a panic. It turned, still upright, then dropped to all fours. Its legs had an odd bend in them, like backward knees. I just screamed, "What is that?" It ran into the swamp, and I got the hell out of there. We eventually stopped on the road back to our cabin. By then, it was dark. Amy and I both cried. We couldn't stop shaking. We talked about what we had just seen, and we both agreed that we would tell people we had seen a bear. To be honest, at that time, I thought it was a deformed bear. Today, I know it was not. I am no longer in denial. What I saw, I cannot understand or explain. The witness in this case did as many others do. Either rationalize the encounter as something else or just keep their mouths shut. They may feel alone and isolated in their terrifying experience, but they are definitely not alone. Others have seen the very same thing in Wisconsin. In fact, this state happens to be home to one of the most legendary and well-documented dogman cases on record, the Beast of Bray Road. The story of the Bray Road Beast begins in 1989 in the vicinity of Elkhorn, Wisconsin, a rural patch of America flanked by farms and cornfields. On a fall evening in 1989, Lori Andreese was driving along the lonely stretch of Bray Road when she noticed a strange animal kneeling beside the pavement, much like a human would. As she got closer, she could see it was holding something in its hands, or paws, which looked like roadkill. As Lori drove by the animal, she could see it was a huge canine with a long, wolf-like snout, fanged teeth, and pointy ears. To her, it looked like a werewolf. The creature's eyes reflected in the headlights as Lori passed by. It did not appear to be alarmed by the presence of her car. Its gaze merely followed the moving vehicle. 2 years later, Doris Gibson, a local school bus driver, was driving on Bray Road when she ran over something. Fearing that she'd hit someone's pet, Doris stopped to check. She got out of the car but didn't see anything in front of it. When she walked to the back of the car, she was horrified to see a large, muscular creature charging at her from a nearby cornfield. It resembled a canine, with brown fur and pointed ears. Yet it was running upright on its hind legs. Doris jumped back into her car and raced from the scene. The incidents eventually came to the attention of John Fredrickson, the humane officer for Walworth County, where Bray Road is located. The witness statements were certainly bizarre, yet so compelling he kept them on file in a folder marked Werewolf. It was the first step towards legitimizing the phenomenon. By 1991, numerous eyewitnesses in the area had come forward, including an 11-year-old girl who said she had seen a similar beast, along with several other kids, while sledding close to Bray Road. The girl said they were walking home in the snow when they saw what appeared to be a large dog standing by a creek. They decided to approach it, but stopped short when the animal stood up on its back legs and began walking towards them. The frightened children fled, at which time the creature turned and ran off into the woods. She described it as having dark, silver-streaked fur with a muscular build and a face like a, quote, coyote. Like the other witnesses, she said it was much larger than any dog or coyote she'd ever seen. In the end, at least 8 people reported sightings of a werewolf-like creature around Bray Road from 1989 to 1991, making it something that could not be ignored by the local press, especially my late colleague Linda Godfrey, a journalist working for the Walworth County Week. Once Linda became aware of the sightings, she launched her own investigation, interviewing witnesses and fielding new reports. She initially published the information as articles in the Walworth County Week, and then later in a book titled Beast of Bray Road. As stories of the Bray Road Beast began to circulate in the news, it led to more reports suggesting that perhaps a creature or creatures fitting this description had been prowling the area for much longer. A journalist named Joe Shackelman came forward relating a story his late father, Mark Shackelman, told him before he died. Joe said that in 1936, his father was working as a night watchman at the St. Coletta School for Exceptional Children in Jefferson, Wisconsin. While on patrol one night, Mark noticed a man-sized hairy creature on top of a Native American burial mound behind the main building. The creature was hunched over, digging furiously at the soil. When it caught sight of Mark, it stood upright and ran away on 2 legs. The watchman returned to the spot the following night, where again he saw the creature scratching at the mound. The thing quickly noticed Mark, but instead of running away, this time it stood up on 2 legs and faced him. Mark shined a flashlight at the animal so he could get a better look. The creature, he said, was over 6 feet tall, covered with dark hair, with a muzzle and pointy ears like a canine, and powerful arms that ended in hands, not paws. And it gave off a terrible odor. The thing locked eyes with a frightened watchman as it vocalized something that sounded like Kadara in a sort of human-like voice. The creature then slowly walked away, still upright, on 2 legs. Not surprisingly, Mark kept the details quiet aside from telling his wife, and eventually his son, Joe, who ultimately made it public. Linda Godfrey interviewed Joe Shackelman and felt he was very credible. Another man, David Jetson, claimed that about 15 years prior to the Bray Road sightings, he was working as an agent for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. During that time, he received a call from a woman who lived 2 miles away from the St. Coletta School, claiming that she had seen a strange ape-like figure walking on her farmland. Jetson drove out to investigate, but didn't find any trace of the creature. 2 weeks later, the woman called again, saying the creature had walked up to her front porch, rattled the screen door, and left a slash mark on the house. The description sounds something like a Sasquatch, but Sasquatch do not usually leave claw marks on houses. What then could it have been? These stories, if true, suggest that there has been some kind of bipedal wolf-like creature roaming the Midwest long before anyone began to research these sort of things. The Beast of Bray Road is only the tip of the pointed ear, so to speak. Around the same time as the seminal Beast of Bray Road sightings, creepy canids were also stalking the wilds of Illinois. According to a man named Allen, in May of 1987, he was living in Zion, Illinois, just south of the Illinois-Wisconsin border. He had been suffering from insomnia, so one night he decided to take a walk. He set out toward a nearby lake, which put him on a lonely path through the North Dunes Nature Preserve. He eventually made it out to the lake, where he took a moment to admire the moonlit setting before heading back through the preserve. About halfway back, however, Alan began to feel uneasy, as if someone or something was watching him. Moments later, he saw a dark, humanoid figure hunched over in the path ahead. The thought of running into a person out there in the dark was unsettling enough, but this did not look altogether human. As Alan observed the figure, it turned its head to reveal what looked like a muzzle. When it stood up, the thing appeared to be nearly 7 feet in height, with broad shoulders, long arms, a canine-like face, and what looked like pointed ears flattened against its head. The thing lingered a moment before it walked into the trees on two legs. Alan panicked and quickly hurried down the path, trying his best to avoid the spot where the creature had entered the woods. When he started running, he could hear the thing pacing him just inside the trees, as if to taunt him. A few times it stepped out into the open, but quickly moved out of sight again. Toward the end of the path, where it ended at a railroad track, the bizarre animal stepped into the open again, this time closer to Alan. The frightened man ran as fast as he could, not looking back until he was well beyond the woods. At that point, he could see the thing standing there, as if to make sure the intruder had left its territory. The location of these sightings, such as a burial mound or railroad track, seems to have some significance beyond mere coincidence. Take the widely publicized story of the so-called Defiance Werewolf of Ohio. The case literally took place in a railroad yard. According to the Toledo Bend newspaper, on a dark night in late July 1972, a train switch operator was working at the Defiance rail yard when something approached him from behind. When he turned to look, he was shocked to see a hairy, werewolf-like creature standing over him. As soon as the rail worker got eyes on it, the thing turned and ran on two legs into some nearby woods. A few nights later, the same sort of beast was spotted by two more railroad workers. A motorist also reported seeing the same creature about an hour later when it ran across the road in front of his car. The case was widely publicized in the newspaper and was taken reasonably seriously by the local law officials, who eventually organized a search. The police thought it was most likely a person wearing a hairy mask and dark clothes playing pranks, but the witnesses weren't so sure. However, just as suddenly as the sighting started, they stopped, leaving everyone to wonder just what it was that stalked Defiance that summer. Why would these things be seen around railroad tracks? It could simply be that railroad tracks often run through small towns and rural areas where there are also woods. If these are some type of animals, they would naturally be seen in wooded areas, or would be attracted to things like a grain car where they could get food. Burial mounds are also in wooded areas, along with old cemeteries where other reports have originated. It could be coincidence, but then again, it could have something to do with an association between sacred locations and monstrous beasts who are perhaps protecting the areas, or perhaps are cursed.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Your time and expertise are valuable, making Focus one of the most important resources to have at work. These days, professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication. And it can be difficult to stay on task with all the emails and documents you have to get through. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, you can stay focused and quickly get through your work with relevant real-time suggestions wherever you write. It works across 500,000 apps and websites, so it can help with everything, from brainstorming presentation ideas to sounding more confident and persuasive in emails and reports. For 15 years, Grammarly has offered best-in-class communication support and enterprise-grade security on a business model that doesn't sell your data. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.
If you try to do some scholarly research on the internet, you'll be led to believe that the first sighting of a dogman in the Midwest occurred in Wexford County, Michigan in 1887. 11 lumberjacks were said to be working in the woods near the Manistee River when they spotted an animal they thought was a dog. The dog ran into a hollow log, and when it reemerged, it stood up on two legs. The lumberjacks were never heard from again. 10 years later, a farmer near Buckley was supposedly found dead, slumped over his plow. Dog tracks were all around. Another decade later, a sheriff was said to have found yet more people who had apparently died of fright, this time surrounded by wolf tracks. What the internet pages failed to mention is that the source of these stories comes from song lyrics written in 1987, not from newspapers or other documented reports. The lyrics are part of a song called The Legend, written by Steve Cook, a Traverse City, Michigan radio personality. In 1987, he penned the lyrics and recorded them in a spoken word fashion over some background music so he could play it across the airwaves as an April Fool's Day joke. The song tells the story of a creature called the Dogman that emerges on the seventh year of every decade. The song was also released and sold on CD, with the profits going to a local animal shelter. In 67, a band load of hippies told a park ranger named Quinlan they'd been awakened in the night by a scratch at the window. There was a dog man looking in and grinning. The lyrics say, according to Cook, the lyrics are essentially fictional, as he attempted to create a backstory for his dogman that would fit general American folklore. Cook had not actually heard of any such reports in Michigan, but it wasn't hard to invent something that sounded scary and real. The locations mentioned in the lyrics were simply chosen due to their location within the broadcasting range of the station. But the April Fool's joke backfired as people began to call the station saying the Dogman was real and they had seen it. Cook was astonished. It was like a catalyst that drew forth actual stories from Michigan and beyond. So while the song has led to confusion regarding the early encounter history, we can be sure that 1987 marks the origin of the term Dogman that now defines this werewolf-like cryptid. And despite the made-up story about the loggers on the Manistee River, there have been documented encounters from that very area. One of the most notable of these comes from Ray Greenway in Manistee. According to Greenway, in 1986, he saw a pair of glowing yellow eyes high off the ground in the distance. Whatever it was immediately ran away and leaped clear across the road. Ray recounts, I saw both eyes, as if it was looking at me the whole time. That, along with the leaping ability, is what I will never forget. By the time 2007 rolled around, sales of Cook's CD had dwindled, though the legend of the Dogman had been steadily increasing. As a way to reignite sales and to bring his song up to date, Cook released a revised version of the legend with a more interesting ending. The lyrics now asked, what does a legend become when the truth outruns the fiction? Well, it becomes a cryptid that is widely reported and hotly debated, and one that still has a confusing history due to an associated film clip. Shortly after Cook released the updated version of his song in 2007, he was approached by a man who had created some interesting footage that shows what looks like a strange hairy animal attacking the cameraman. The footage was made to look like it was filmed in the 1970s with a grainy, washed-out appearance. The result is very effective and impressed Cook so much that he helped circulate the film, claiming that it had come from an 8mm film canister found at an estate sale, marked with only the name of Gable. The Gable film, as it came to be known, was circulated to several cryptid researchers, including Linda Godfrey, hoping to get some positive endorsements. The film clip, which shows something big and hairy bounding toward the camera operator before going black, looks interesting, but was just too grainy and blurry to draw any solid conclusions, even for an expert such as Godfrey. The footage was also posted on the internet, where, in typical internet fashion, it garnered a lot of views and a lot of emotional opinions. The matter wasn't settled until 2010, when the television show Monster Quest set out to find the truth. What they discovered was a well-executed amateur film that was made in the spirit of fun. During the course of the TV show, the filmmaker, Micah Grusa, demonstrated how he had made the film using an old 8mm camera and some vintage 1970s vehicles. To create the look of the Dogman, Grusa wore a ghillie suit and bounded wildly at the camera. When Cook helped circulate the film, it once again boosted the legend of the Michigan Dogman, with many people never realizing that the film was a fabrication. While the Gable film doesn't help matters when trying to discern the truth and possibilities of the Dogman, it surely doesn't erase the hundreds, if not thousands, of first-person reports coming from witnesses who believe they have seen such a beast roaming the dark corners of the Midwest.
Hey, this is Chester Moore. For years, I've been uncovering the eerie and unexplained of the Dark Outdoors podcast. But after a conversation with my good friend Lyle Blackburn, something big has come across my radar. There are strange reports of lost tribes, primitive people in the wilds of East Texas. Stories that seem unbelievable until you hear the details. Lyle and I have teamed up to uncover the truth, but we need your help. Have you seen or heard anything unusual in the woods of East Texas or other areas that line up with these lost tribe stories? Maybe a glimpse of something or someone you can't explain? If so, reach out to us. Email me at chester@chestermoore.com, lyle@lyleblackburn.com, or leave a voicemail on the Global Bigfoot Hotline at 409-300-1052.
I recently visited the great state of Minnesota, where massive forests and numerous lakes create a truly astounding wilderness paradise. With so many wooded and rural areas, and a close proximity to the neighboring state of Wisconsin, home of the Bray Road Beast, I decided to see if there were any Dogman reports close to where I was located near Duluth. Sure enough, I found a rather harrowing account that supposedly occurred smack dab in Duluth. According to the witness, who requested her name to be held from the public record, she was driving just outside of Duluth on November 7th, 2016, on a dark, half-moon night, when something dashed in front of her car. It ran from the edge of a sparse residential area to a field where an old barn sat decaying. The thing was huge and dog-like, running fast on all fours, though not in the way a normal dog would run.
The face was wolf or dog-like, with a longer snout and high-set, small pointed ears. The back was very angled, with extra long front legs in comparison to the back. The leg length discrepancy caused it to walk more stiffly, almost with an injured-type stride. The forearm was muscled, but it wasn't primate or walking on its knuckles. It had more of a forward stride, like a deer, just not as smooth. Since the night was shadowed, it reminded me of a shadow person, as the black was such an intense black. For a second, I wondered if it was my imagination, but I continued to watch and saw a far-coming vehicle's lights shine between its moving legs. It definitely wasn't a deer or moose, not a bear, not a Bigfoot, nothing ape or human-like. My sister said she, her ex-boyfriend, and a friend have all seen it on its hind legs a few years ago. It lives near her house. She said it stood and watched them on the edge of the field with red eyes. The oddest part was the feeling of incredible fear and dread. Fear does not begin to describe it. The feeling lingers, like feeling a thick sludge weighing on me, really like an energy attack. I was an active camper, hiker, etc. Now I don't want to be out in the dark, the woods, or driving alone at night. I know better. To fear these things is not good. It's just hard to shake.
Like Bigfoot, these creatures are often reported in forested areas where it would be logical to find such shadowy beasts. However, dogmen have also been reported much closer to populated areas, such as farms and even neighborhoods. And perhaps this makes the possible existence of these monsters even more alarming. Take, for example, this report from St. Louis County, Missouri. According to the witness, he saw something absolutely frightening one night while simply taking his trash out. He said he grabbed a flashlight, walked out of his back door, and was dragging the trash can while walking backwards along a fence separating his house from the neighbor's. He had just passed his neighbor's garage when his flashlight fell upon some kind of large, wolf-like creature. It was crouched down about 20 feet away, looking directly at him. When their eyes met, the creature turned, dropped to all fours, and leaped over his neighbor's driveway in a single jump. The witness described the thing as being about 8 feet tall and perhaps 300 pounds. It was lean around the waist, but very muscular overall. The fur was short and charcoal gray in color, and the eyes glowed a vibrant yellow. As soon as the wolf thing was out of sight, the witness dropped the trash can and ran inside, where he grabbed a gun and hid in his room the rest of the night. This was said to have occurred on November 19th, 2015. In reviewing various reports, it becomes clear that descriptions of these creatures can vary, especially in regards to their propensity for staying upright. Some witnesses say the creatures were walking on two legs, while others were moving on four legs, although sometimes in a strange fashion. Some are seen standing on two legs, but then dropping to all fours before leaping or running away. As I mentioned previously, the anatomy of quadrupeds, such as dogs, aren't designed for bipedal locomotion. They can do it for a short period of time, but they lack the balance and body structure to be adept at it. Their quadruped anatomy is designed for quickness, balance, and speed, which is necessary for their survival. The majority of a dog's weight is actually centered over their front legs. Their hind legs and hips are built in such a way as to help propel them forward, with the front legs and chest handling stopping, body weight support, and aggressive moves. So why would an animal like this choose to stand on two legs? Various theories abound. One suggests that perhaps they are using the stance to see the landscape better, such as looking over the top of cornrows. Or perhaps it's a way to appear more threatening. Nature is adaptable, and perhaps a subset of normal canids are evolving differently. If we consider these creatures to be more paranormal in nature, as many believe, then the rules of known wildlife biology and anatomy may not even apply. Either way, The ability to stand upright is a frightening trait and one that would surely strike fear into any witness who may encounter such a creature. Various organizations have been formed to research dogman reports specifically. Bigfoot research groups have been in existence since the 1960s, while the dogman groups have come online within the last decade, owing to the popularity of the creature and the abundance of modern sighting reports. These researchers have identified a number of possible variants in an attempt to categorize the different types. These typically range between 5 and 7 variants, including ones that look more like the traditional image of a werewolf, ones that look like a timber wolf on 2 legs, some that look hyena-like, baboon-like, and even Sasquatch-like with a muzzle. The nuances can be rather baffling, but if this is true, we might be dealing with a whole variety of species running amok under the noses of wildlife game officials who, for the most part, reject the possibility that even one of these types exists. But can all of the witnesses be lying or mistaken? Like Bigfoot, there just seems to be too many reports to dismiss the whole thing out of hand, or out of paw in this case. I have personally interviewed a number of witnesses who claim to have seen something that falls into the category of a dogman, or at least in the category of huge canids for which we have no known explanation. The majority of accounts I have received have taken place in the southern and eastern portions of the United States, but I have received a few that are within the scope of the Midwest. While I was on a trip to Indiana several years ago, a man approached me and asked me if I had ever heard of Dogman. Of course I had. But at that point, I hadn't received too many first-hand encounters. When I had an opportunity to sit down and listen, he told me about an event which he said took place in Indiana back in the summer of 1993. Ron said he had recently bought some property near the Hoosier National Forest, close to the East Fork White River. One evening, while he was driving away from his property, he happened to notice a gray, furry something on the top wire of an old fence. As he got closer, he could see that it was a raccoon, apparently dead, hanging half over the wire. Raccoons were plentiful in the area, so it would not be out of the ordinary to see one, but just not usually hanging over a fence. He thought it was odd, but drove on and didn't think any more about it. 2 days later, Ron returned to the property where he spent several hours clearing some brush. By the time he was done, it was dark with only a hint of moonlight breaking through the trees. He cleaned himself up and got into his truck, ready to grab something to eat and a cold beer. He navigated out of the property, closing and locking the gate before turning on the road back to town. As he approached the area where he had seen the raccoon carcass, which he noticed was gone when he drove by earlier, he noticed something moving along the tree line to his right. Within moments, it darted into the road and into the beam of his headlamps. It was huge and hairy, with dark fur covering its body. The thing was mostly moving on 2 legs, yet using its forearms similar to a dog or an ape. Ron could see that it was chasing a raccoon, which scurried partway across the road, then doubled back for the trees. The bizarre creature stopped its run when it entered the road and saw the headlights. Ron was not sure what kind of animal he was looking at until the thing turned slightly and stood straight up in front of him, approximately 30 yards away. At that point, Ron could see that it was some kind of wolf-like animal with a long muzzle and pointed ears. Its body was like that of a wolf, yet wider and more muscular. It was uniformly covered in dark black fur, which seemed to absorb the halogen beams. The animal, or whatever it was, moved its head forward, apparently growling, though Ron had the windows up and could not hear any sounds. Then, as quickly as it had appeared, the thing bounded back into the woods, moving in the same sort of odd fashion as before. It quickly went out of sight into the blackness beyond the beam of the headlamps. Ron says he doesn't remember his exact thoughts in the moment, except to hit the gas pedal and drive out of there as quickly as he could. Once he got to the main road, he began to think, to process what he had seen. He wasn't sure what it was, but he knew it was not something normal. He kept the property for a short time longer, hardly visiting, before he finally sold it. And I suppose, who could blame him? That toll means it's time for Monstro Mail, where I answer questions directly from you, the listeners. I have a good one here from Ross Martin. Ross writes, I'm really enjoying your podcast segments, especially the Honey Island Swamp Monster episode. My question for you is this. Does it seem as though the era of Bigfoot sighting flaps, such as what occurred in the 1960s and 70s, has come to an end? Specifically, I'm referring to cases such as that of Momo in my home state of Missouri that have a relatively short but intensive number of sightings. Other examples of this would be the Sykesville Monster, the Hawley Hem, or the Lake Worth Monster. It seems that we no longer have these flaps of localized regional sightings. That's a great question. As someone who is sort of specialized in these kind of classic cases, like Momo, Boggy Creek, the Lizard Man, and my new book on the Lake Worth Monster, where there are numerous sightings, monster hunts, and crazy media coverage, I've definitely noticed a lack of these kind of similar cases in recent years. The reason for this may be multifold. First, we need to consider how information was disseminated back in those days. Everyone got their news from newspapers, radio, or local television. If a monster incident was publicized, it was quickly broadcast to a high number of people in the very same area. That often brought forth other witnesses who would have otherwise never been heard from. These additional sightings or incidents added to the story and gave news outlets something more to cover it, if they wanted to or when they needed it. Sometimes this sparked everyone's imagination and it created a news frenzy, especially if the police got involved, as they were more likely to do back then. These are cases I can write an entire book about because there's just so much to them. Nowadays, it seems like we get more sighting reports on a daily basis, but these are rarely in printed newspapers that broadcast to a small regional area. These are spread out all over the internet from reputable news outlets to Facebook pages and straight to YouTube clips. There may be multiple encounters in an area, but they are not followed up on in the same way a newspaper journalist might have done years ago to create a larger story. I also think the news media has a much more jaded view of cryptids these days, so they just relegate such stories to short, after-the-fact clips or just something they post only online. Back when the concept of Bigfoot, for example, was not as well known, the newspapers would often call these things monsters, which had an even more sensational appeal. The sightings were often spooky or even dangerous, creating a monster story that would be remembered for years and even decades to come. Nowadays, if the sighting doesn't come complete with a video, it's not appealing enough to news outlets who just want clickbait regardless of the validity of the report or who's reporting it. This, combined with the massive amount of quick, flashy news clips, rather than follow-up stories, rarely results in something beyond a passing flash. Now, I say all of this, but of course, perhaps the creatures are on the run these days, dodging urban development and trail cams, so they cannot remain in one place for long enough to harass the locals or inspire a movie such as The Legend of Boggy Creek. Even Dogman has charted a few of these classics, such as the Defiance Werewolf, Vider Werewolf, Lawton Werewolf, and of course the Beast of Bray Road. But I don't know if the current news system could ever replicate this type of thing again. Those of you who have read my books know that I have an affinity for the old monster cases where an entire town was sent into a frenzy by some shocking encounters that suggested a monster was loose in the nearby woods. I've covered a number of the best cases, so hopefully there will be more. And speaking of books, if you would like to know more about some of the creature cases I've mentioned on the podcast, these are great sources that go far more in depth. And every book sold helps support this podcast, since the podcast, streams for free. So thanks for all your support, and thanks for the great questions. Keep them coming.
Somewhere out in the North Woods darkness, a creature walks upright. And the best advice you may ever get is to never go out at night.
Humans have always had an innate fear of wolves, and for good reason. They can be dangerous, especially in packs. So it's not hard to imagine how unsettling it would be to see something that resembles a wolf. Yet it's much larger in size, with the ability to stand upright like we do. We might be the dominant species on the planet, but if you were alone, standing face to muzzle with something like this, something that has literally stepped forth from a nightmare, you would probably not feel so superior. And that's the impression I've gotten from the witnesses who have spoken of their encounters online or told them directly to me. The subject of Dogman is a complicated one that could encompass far more than a single podcast episode. These creatures seem to walk the line between a simple cryptid wolf and other stranger possibilities, such as skinwalkers, rougarous, and other supernatural forms. Stories of upright canine creatures exist in many cultures dating back many centuries, often representing forms of good or evil. But what we have here is something that seems more tangible, something that could walk from the woods at any time, or even leap over your fence into your backyard, and crouch there, watching and waiting. Dogman reports are so prolific these days that it's become something of a phenomenon, racking up hundreds of alleged sightings on internet pages and podcasts, and even giving rise to conferences dedicated to the specific study of such things. There is, of course, no solid proof that these sort of man-beasts actually exist, but on the other hand, we can't say they do not. As Linda Godfrey pointed out, some cases could be attributed to hoaxes, misidentified animals, or, depending on one's beliefs, the supernatural. But considering the vast number of credible reports with strikingly similar details, it does beg the question, are these monsters real? And perhaps someday we'll know the answer. Until then, they will continue to stoke our age-old fear of what may be lurking in the darkness on an old country road at the edge of a cornfield whose maze meanders into the very realms of Monstro Bizarro.
At At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
You've got questions? O'Reilly Auto Parts has answers. Need a pro you can trust? We've got that too. No matter what you need, our professional parts people have the training and expertise to help you do things right. Deep automotive knowledge. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!